Hey everybody, you're listening to Stash My Comics Podcast. This is episode number 5, and I am joined with Steven Sparks, the coolest last name in all the forums. That's hey, your real last name, isn't it?
Yeah, that is my real last name, full name.
That's awesome.
I know.
So you could be a superhero just with that last name.
I know, isn't it?
Sort of That's like great. Electric powers.
And with my full name, everybody says I should get my own boat.
Yeah.
Triple S.
Uh-huh.
That's really cool.
Well, we've got some comics to talk about, and we've got a lot of news to cover, so maybe we'll hop in with the news.
News.
All right.
I'm going to start off with something that I was excited about, and that is Valiant's return to the comic book world. I guess it's going to be in May. Have you read any of the past Valiant material?
Yeah, I got Exo Manowar, and that was about it. I might have glimpsed over in my younger days of the other titles, but Exo Manowar is about the only one I can remember, just because of the Prism cover.
Right. Yeah. Valiant was something that I didn't even really know about because I was sort of absent from the comic book scene in the mid to late 90s, kind of during that big boom. I sort of dropped off. But I picked up some of the issues, you know, when I mentioned getting the two-packers at the Dollar General.
Yeah.
And Valiant had a couple stuff comics in there. I think it was Dr. Mirage and Shadow Man were the two that I got. And I wasn't overly impressed by them, but I did like the storytelling. The art was kind of so-so. But this new Manowar, Exo Manowar, looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they do the Prism cover thing, though, because I do believe with back in the 90s, I think every first issue was a Prism color, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
I'm not sure on that. That would be something I'd have to dig into. But, you know, the art, you know, the covers were what I remember Valiant for, not their storytelling. You know, it was like it'd get high and like it plateau out like halfway through the story.
Right. Yeah. What's amazing about Valiant is I was reading up a little bit on them, and I guess at one point they were kind of right up there with Marvel and DC. I think they even had a run where they were like the number one publisher for a little while there.
Really?
Well, which is weird.
I always thought with them as like a neck and neck type thing with Image.
Right.
Like where you know, I'm in Michigan and like the store, I went to two stores back in the 90s nonstop, and it seems like they were neck and neck with like the independent publishers and Image.
Right.
And then you had DC and Marvel for your tier one comics.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think they might have still been around if it weren't for, I guess they had a merger with Acclaim, and then after that they filed for bankruptcy in 2005.
Yeah, I remember them dropping off and never hearing of them again.
Yeah. So it's cool that they're coming back. It's always good to get another universe, and it seems like the 90s in general is sort of making an impact on comics again. I guess you heard about Rob Liefeld being involved in 3 of DC's titles in addition to the Extreme line that he's bringing out with Image.
Yeah. I'm excited. You know, I like Liefeld's work. You know, I like it.
I like him. I'm excited about him doing Deathstroke. That's one of my favorite titles. And while I love what Kyle has done, it's going to be interesting to see Rob's take on Deathstroke. That seems like a character he was born to write.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little Deadpool-ish, I figure.
Yeah, definitely.
It'll
well,
be
cool.
Good.
What do you got on the news items?
Oh, well, let's see. Went on the DC website a few days ago, and looks like they're starting a new 2-year campaign called We Can Be Heroes.
Hmm.
From what I gather from it, it's going to feature the Justice League, and it's going to concentrate on the hunger crisis in Africa. And I guess it's going to be in support with 3 other humanitarian organizations.
Mm-hmm.
It's Save the Children and the International Rescue Committee and the Mercy Corps. And from what I also gathered is that DC is going to match donations 100%, up to $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah, and then even if you buy merchandise off their website, 50% of that's going to go towards the contribution.
Hmm.
So, and, you know, if anybody else is interested in it, the website is wecanbeheroes.org.
Cool. Well, sounds like a good cause.
Yeah, most
definitely. For DC. Cool. Well, in other DC news, we're a little bit late jumping in on this, but I figure we'd give our 2 cents. Are there any of the 6 canceled books that you're disappointed in? And those would be Men of War, Mr. Terrific, OMAC, Hawk and Dove, Black Hawks, and Static Shock.
Didn't get any of those.
I didn't either.
So no disappointment. You know, I sort of knew from the start that OMAC was going to get canceled. It's like, come on, who's OMAC? Question.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I didn't think Hawk and Dove was going to do that good. You know, they did have their run in Brightest Day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's all they were worth was their 2 cents in that and see ya.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other title, Static Shock, you know, they did the cartoon on it. I watched the cartoon. Wasn't impressed. So, No comic book for me.
Yeah. Well, in Men of War, it seems like they're just folding that into the Men of War and Blackhawks are just going to probably be kind of folded into GI Combat. I mean, that's basically the one replacement book for those two titles.
So are these like, I've never, you know, I don't really know much about those two titles, but is it what, like army based or?
Yeah, I guess it's military army stuff. The Blackhawks one, everybody's been comparing to, they've been saying that's DC's G.I. Joe title. Ah. And then Men of War, I guess there's some characters in the DC universe that have showed up there before. G.I. Combat, looks like this is a return of an original series. But basically the same thing. It's for people who are into war stories and that type of thing. I know people who are enjoying Mr. Terrific, but I don't think anybody saw that lasting particularly long.
Nah, I sort of. He's, you know, he's like one of those B-class, C-class characters. You know, yeah. I think they're trying to revive or, you know, give a chance to the, you know, the B-list.
Yeah. Okay, well, the new books, we knew Batman Incorporated was coming back, and that will happen. And then Earth 2, for those of you who are Justice Society fans, that's where that will come into play. I'm actually looking forward to that one. I like the whole parallel Earth thing, and Justice Society was something I wanted to get into before the relaunch, but never had a chance to jump on, so this will be a good jumping on point for me. World's Finest. I don't know what this... Okay, this is Huntress and Power Girl trapped on Earth 1, I would guess, and they're trying to find their way back to Earth 2. And Dial H, I don't... Are you familiar with Dial H?
No, this is the name of the title?
Yeah, this is the name of the book. I guess this is taken from comicbookresources.com, but it's a new take on a cult classic concept about the psychological effects on an everyman who accidentally gains powers to become a hero. And then I mentioned G.I. Combat, and then The Ravagers, which is a spinoff from Teen Titans. And a lot of people are saying that this is DC's version of Marvel's Runaways.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. You know, I'm looking forward to that title.
Yeah.
I just started collecting DC when Blackest Night started, so I don't know a lot of the history. You know, I know who the players are, I know their powers, but I don't know the event timeline.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I don't either.
It's nice with this new
52. Go ahead.
It's nice with this new 52 to, you know, sort of start over.
That's what I was thinking too. And like you, I really kind of just started back on DC at the end of Blackest Night, so this is all still pretty fresh for me.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of that existing baggage coming in when I'm reading. Okay, other news. What do you got?
All right. We're going to be seeing the new Avengers figures come out soon here. didn't get a date on it, so I'm going to probably assume it's going to be probably a month or two before the movie comes out. The line's going to have Iron Man, Nick Fury, Captain America, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Loki, and Thor. Now, I don't know if this is going to be the first series of the set, if they're going to do two different launches with different figures. They look more among the Marvel Universe, so they're a little bit smaller. So I figure there's going to probably be between, you know, seven, you know, to $9 a figure.
Okay.
And, you know, they look pretty nice, you know, but on the pictures, those are probably just the prototypes. So I'm sure when they get into mass producing, they're going to go down in value a little, just right. A little bit. But I'm really looking forward to the Hulk one. The Hulk one looks really cool. And, yeah, that's it on the toy line.
Well, and these, I'm assuming these will look like the movie characters?
Yeah, they look identical.
Identical. Yeah, I'm psyched about that movie. And I don't even really read a whole lot of Marvel, but I would imagine I'm not alone in being super excited for that movie.
Oh, I think every comic book nerd is just raging on it right now. You know, I like that time because what's cool is all the Marvel movies come out usually 2 days before my birthday.
Hmm.
So it's always the cool birthday week to go at midnight and go see it.
Right. Now, that movie is coming out. Isn't it coinciding with Free Comic Book Day?
Well, let's see. Usually
May 5th?
May 5th is my birthday, so that's usually Free Comic Book Day.
Okay.
And, usually May 3rd.
Okay.
Is the big release date.
Gotcha.
So, and did you want to say something?
Nope. Go ahead.
All right. And then I also find out while reading that figure page on Marvel, at the bottom, they also had two release dates for Iron Man 3 and Thor 2.
Hmm.
So I don't know if anybody read that because nobody usually reads the bottom. They just read the main paragraph and hit the X button. So it looks like the release date for Iron Man 3 is going to be May 3rd of 2013.
Hmm.
And then with Thor 2, it looks like it's going to be November 15th, 2013.
Okay.
So two big releases again.
Yeah, and of course those are going to get swept under the rug until Avengers comes out. But...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm just really thinking on what's DC doing here. You know,
mm-hmm.
all their big movies besides, you know, Batman.
Right. Superman is going to be big for them. That movie has to be successful.
Oh, it has to. The last one's flopped horribly.
Yeah. Between, you know, Green Lantern, which wasn't all that bad, but really was sort of a miss for them, and Batman, you know, with that ending, they really need another superhero movie to step up and make some money for them to even think about going beyond the Batman world.
Yeah, and then you got to wonder if they're going to try to tie all of them in together and create the Justice League movie.
Yeah, that I would be extremely excited to see, but I think it's all going to hinge on Superman, because obviously they're probably going to have to reboot the Batman franchise to tie that in properly with Justice League.
Oh, yeah, you know, the Batman franchise, it's... You know, it's the competition to Spider-Man for Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're always out around the same time, it looks like, and I don't know. It's tricky with those DC movies, but Superman, that last one was just get me a barf bag or something. it wasn't good at all. It was horrible.
I could barely make it through it, and that's not a slam against the people who made it, and it was an homage to the Christopher Reeve one, and I get that, but I think they really needed to just do something completely different, and that's what they're doing now. And I love the actor choice. Henry Cavill seems like I know everybody's saying he's a little bit short, but that's the kind of thing you can hide in movies. And,
he looks good for the part.
He does.
But I don't know why they didn't get the guy from Smallville though.
Yeah. He would have been a good choice, for sure.
I don't know why. I think, you know, that would have been a great career choice, but then also he probably would have wound up being typecasted for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Well, and I just started watching Smallville. That was one of those shows that I kept saying to myself, why am I not watching this? And everybody's like, oh, it's great, it's great. So I finally started it. I'm just like halfway through the first season, and I definitely get the love for this guy, for him being the next Superman. It seems like a natural evolution. You know, the funny thing is, one of the episodes, what's her name? The one that's playing Lois in the new movie.
Oh, I don't know. I don't.
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
She's actually in one of the Smallville episodes.
Real interesting.
If you remember the one, it was about a girl who had a eating disorder.
Okay. I started watching Smallville. You know, I bought the first season about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I made it halfway through, but I recently rebooted it up about a month ago.
Okay.
And I'm like maybe four or five episodes in. It's, you know, when I'm bored, and that's usually when I turn it on. But, you know, looking through the book, you know, the episode guide, I know what episode you're talking about. It's later. It's like episode 9 or 10 or something like that.
Yeah, I wanted to say it's 8 or 9, and she's fat and winds up finding this shake that she can make out of her vegetables in her garden, which obviously have the green kryptonite or meteor rocks in them, and it makes her skinny really fast. But it was just funny to me to see her there and realize that, oh, that's going to be Lois Lane.
That's funny.
Well, moving on from movie stuff, do you have anything else on the news front?
Yeah, I got a little news on that Marvel MMO that's coming out.
Okay.
Hopefully, within the next few years, we'll see it. Because they started in 2009. Originally, I guess it was supposed to – they were supposed to tag team up with Microsoft, but things threw, like, down, and it never went through. And then about last year sometimes, you know, news article popped up on it. And I guess the basis is you're going to be able to play as the actual superheroes. Hmm. And you know, they got a few screenshots up for it of just the character models. You know, they have Deadpool up, they have Cap up, Spider-Man, and Thor and Cable. So, you know, I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know if it's going to be like DC Universe Online.
Do they mention that you'll get to make your own character or anything like that?
No, nothing like that yet. It's still, you know, in the, you know, primitive stage of everything and of design and development.
Huh.
But they just picked up Epic Games, which also in turn brings in the Unreal Engine, which Unreal pretty much, they help with every game now. You know, with the physics, the graphics, and it, with them on board, the game's probably going to be really cool. And it could probably overthrow DC Universe Online. Hmm. Possibly.
Yeah.
But then here's also the one downfall. In the article I read, it looks like it's only going to come out for the PC.
Ah. So they won't have Xbox or anything like that, huh?
Mm-mm. Hmm. So, and I think that could actually hurt the game.
Yeah, that could hurt them. Definitely.
So, and you know, there's no news whether you'll be able to play as villains. Right now, it just looks like you'll only be able to play as the heroes.
Okay.
So hopefully you can play as the villains, because the villains are the underdogs and are usually way cooler than the heroes in the video game. Oh. Yeah, but that's about all I got in the news.
Okay. I think that's all I got, too. So we've got a couple of new titles to talk about. And then for our special segment, we're going to each do a back issue. So let's go ahead and go into reviews.
Reviews.
Okay, so we're going to review a couple books here. I decided to go with Suicide Squad number 5. And fortunately, Steven has also read this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Love it.
Now, you've been following this from issue number 1, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is written by writer Adam Glass. The art is by Federico Dallocchio.
Yep.
Right? Colors by Val Staples. Letterer, Jared K. Fletcher. Cover artist, Ken Lashley with Rod Rice. And if you guys aren't reading this, you're missing out. It's a crazy good time.
And those are the perfect words for it.
Or it's maybe just a fun book.
Yeah, a crazy, violent time.
Right.
It's unbelievable, this book, this series.
Well, so this issue starts out with they have a new member, Yo-Yo, and I guess this is a new character just invented, correct?
Yeah, it looks like it. I've never heard of it. You know, I think there's a character in the Marvel Universe called Yo-Yo, but this is a whole – never heard of it.
Yeah. This is an Asian fellow that can alter his mass and thickness, and he's in this kind of ridiculous yellow and blackish jumpsuit, and he's hilarious because in a lot of panels he looks ridiculously fat, and then towards the end of his run here, we find him very skinny
and
temporarily.
This character is going to get like in that category of like Squirrel Girl and all those low budget characters.
Yeah.
The outfit's ridiculous though. It's
it
black
is.
And yellow and it makes no sense.
So we got Yo-Yo and Deadshot and Diablo. And for those of you not familiar, these characters live most of their time in the Belle Reve prison where they are serving their time. Now the Suicide Squad members get out to do missions in exchange for, I guess, reduced sentences. And we're taken right into the middle of action with Deadshot, Cap, and a bunch of convicts because a riot has erupted. And Amanda Waller has given the Suicide Squad the order to get this situation under control. And
yeah.
So last issue, we actually saw the squad returning from a mission. We got to see Captain Boomerang on the team, and he actually got set up and taken off of the group in one issue. I guess they killed Captain Boomerang.
Really?
Did you get that sense?
No.
Well, I know they gave him up, essentially, and I was just assuming that that meant that he was going to be killed.
Well, you know, he's a huge Flash villain. I don't think they'd ever kill him off.
Yeah.
You know, I got issue 4 in front of me right now, and, you know, towards the end, all you really see is, you know, he gets sold out by them, and then you see Deadshot blast him in the hand as Boomerang's trying to throw a boomerang at him.
Right. Yeah, so I guess that could be interpreted in a number of ways, but
yeah.
The people they surrendered him over to definitely had some issues with him that need some resolving.
Yeah.
So anyways, fast forwarding to the issue number 5. For those of you who don't know, this group has micro bombs put in their brains. This keeps them in check. And so on every mission, they're on usually a timer. And they have to complete their task. If they do not, it could go off. If they try to escape, they have the option to be blown up. They have to be reset by these people at the Belle Reve detention center. And so Amanda Waller, as we turn the page here, she's in a safe room trying to direct things and get things under control. She asks Yo-Yo to go find King Shark. And then we get to Black Spider. And I had forgotten about him because we really hadn't seen him since, I think, issue 3.
Yeah, either issue 2 or 3, like the near end of issue 2, I want to say. Maybe issue 3, possibly. I forget.
Yeah, I think, because I went through all these, and I'm pretty sure it was issue 3 where he was shot, and El Diablo sort of helped get him to the helicopter. And we find him, you know, laying on a bed, nursing his wounds, and he's able to take out about 5 or so of the convicts that try to attack him before he passes out.
Yeah.
And now we're back to Deadshot and El Diablo, and they're trying to get things under control. El Diablo's like, hey, Deadshot, go up to the guard tower. There's a riot gun up there. We can get things under control. I'll hold these people off with my fire powers. Now, El Diablo is a character I don't know a whole lot about. I know he's not the first El Diablo. Have you read him in any other books?
No, you know, he's new for me. So, very passive character, but
yeah.
as we go on this issue, I think this issue really developed around him.
Yeah.
He was on a lot of pages, you know, he had a lot of dialogue in this issue, and his growth within the team is becoming more noticed.
Yeah. He's a cool looking character. He's of Hispanic descent, and he's got all these crazy tattoos on him that evidently disappear the more he uses this firepower. And you're right, he's a very passive character. We often see him trying not to hurt people, trying to reason with people. He's the ultimate sort of man of redemption. He wants to be redeemed for the actions that he's done. He wants to serve his time, and he has this belief in God, and it's totally different from the belief and the insanity that's within the rest of this group. And that's what I like about his character.
Oh yeah, it's great. Now with his tattoos, do they like regenerate back on him?
That's what I can't figure out, and I'd have to look through the issues. It seems like he's always got the back tattoos, but the tattoos that were on his chest and arms are disappearing.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed.
It'll be interesting to see if they do regenerate.
Yeah.
So now we move on. We see El Diablo trying to fight them off here, and he gets taken out because he's, again, trying to reason with these people. He gets knocked out. A convict with a crowbar basically lays him out.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And so we got Amanda Waller saying, yo, have you found King Shark yet? And then you get to the most hilarious part of this comic. What happens to Yo-Yo?
Yeah, it's not good.
Yo-Yo uses his powers to sneak through this little grate where King Shark is just sitting there with these big black eyes staring off into space. And Yo-Yo's thinking that King Shark is sick, but King Shark is just biding his time. And skinny Yo-Yo gets eaten by King Shark.
Yeah.
It's pretty gruesome.
You know, we all know so far, if you've been reading the series, King Shark loves fresh meat. It seems like almost every issue he takes a chunk out of somebody.
Yeah. I didn't think he'd eat his own team member, but he must be desperate here.
I don't think he cares.
Yeah.
I honestly don't. I think, you know, everybody thinks Harley's the loose cannon. I honestly think it's King Shark.
Yeah.
He's brutal.
I love that they've made him a hammerhead. I don't know why. It just looks cool.
Well, wasn't he like, he was like a white shark originally, was he?
Yeah, I think he was just a great white, and they just, for whatever reason. He's got a great costume. He looks like he's out of a Conan movie. He's got this purple sort of, what would you call that, a tunic or something?
Yeah, and then he's got these little, you know, forearm plates, and the purple looks cute on him. I'll give him that. It looks cute.
He is a king. I guess it's the color of royalty.
So do you know much background on him? Was he like, born this way, or was he?
I don't know a lot about him. I did read a little bit of him, and the only thing I know is that I guess he was a villain that was fighting against Superboy. I think that was his first appearance.
Really?
We'll have to look that up. But moving on, you know, Amanda is shouting out, Yo-Yo! I mean, I'm not sure why she's surprised that King Shark ate somebody, but this is, to be fair, this is the first time he's eaten one of his own teammates.
Yes.
So she's thinking, oh, only Deadshot's left. And she takes out a convict who's trying to break into her little safe spot. Deadshot gets up to the riot gun and starts to shake. And we remember from issue 2 that he was infected by something called the rot virus.
Yes.
So now he's shaken and he's sick. He gets thrown off the tower. And Amanda's thinking, it's over. She's calling her husband saying, everything's okay. I just wanted to say I love you. We see everybody laid out. We see King Shark just staring at the wall again. She's getting ready to press the button to release nerve gas to, I guess, destroy everything. And that's when El Diablo steps up.
Yes.
And we see him unleash his fire power like never before. And there's a really cool image. I'm not sure what page this is. This is 15. And it's almost a full page spread of El Diablo rising up from this gigantic fire, and behind him is like this ancient looking skull, and
Yeah.
Super cool. His pants are all burnt. And he says, I will show you hell. You mocked my words of redemption, saw it as a weakness. He's unleashing on these guys.
Oh.
And he terrifies, he burns a lot of them, but what this does is it terrifies them to see how powerful he is. And essentially, El Diablo saves the day and gets everything under control. And then go ahead.
Then if you look at the last frame of this part of the scene,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting. He says, penance over purgatory, return to yourselves.
Mm.
So in a way, he used violence in a passive way.
Yeah.
It was really cool. I really like that.
Yeah, he burned a few guys, but ultimately, he's trying to save these guys' lives. And he's looking down at Deadshot, and El Diablo really has this love for his teammates, despite how ridiculous they think he is for his beliefs. And he says that he will find a way to redeem Floyd Lawton, the man.
Yeah.
And then Amanda's patching Deadshot up. He's attached to this weird-looking device that's relieving him of, I guess, his virus. And he gets to see, I'm guessing this is his daughter.
You
know who that is?
Well, she calls him Floyd.
Yeah, maybe she's the daughter of somebody he has a relationship with, but isn't his biologically.
Yeah, maybe like a stepfather or, you know, a parental peer, I guess.
Yeah, if anybody knows, let us know on that one, because I don't have a history on this girl. Podcast at stashmycomics.com. Shoot us an email. But he gets some time with her, and he had a deal with Amanda that this would be an hour, but she cuts it short. Says, you'll get the rest of your time later, but right now, I need you to find Harley. And that's when we find out that Harley has started this riot, and Harley has killed a couple of guards. I'm wondering, no, I don't think they're in the trunk. She has them tied up, and there's blood coming from their mouths. But she's headed to Gotham, more than likely to look for Joker.
Yep, and that's where it's going.
Yep.
And me, I'm super excited for this. I was waiting for Harley to get her shining moment, because everybody knows she can't go more than 5 minutes without the Joker.
No.
You know,
she thinks he's dead, or Captain Boomerang said that he was dead, and you could see it in her eyes and in that issue that she was going to do something about it.
Yeah. And you know, I'm looking forward to the next issue big time, because I like what they're doing with Harley. You know, she's still sadistic, crazy, and in love.
Yep. I really hope they are able to tie this in with the Joker. Maybe her getting back with the Joker in some way, or maybe the Joker joining this insanity. It should be interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was where did I look? I saw a preview page for the next Suicide Squad somewhere. Oh, yes, it's in Green Lantern Corps, which we'll get to in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they show Joker, and he's, you know, it's sort of interesting with the cover. It shows Harley with Deadshot, but then Deadshot's in full garb, and then it has the Joker's skin on him.
Hmm.
And she's got a gun to Deadshot's throat.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's some sketches, and it looks like we see what maybe Joker looks like now, but, you know, it's all smooth-faced and everything like that.
Huh.
So, you know, I don't know where in the timeline this is all taking place.
Yeah. And I'm not reading Detective Comics, so I don't really have a handle on what's going on with the Joker. I know that he has, like, half a face or something.
Yeah, I'm sort of behind on it. I just got done reading issue 2 and 3 the other night, and very intense. If you're interested, I'd probably pick up the first 5 issues.
Okay.
And it's good writing. It's like a big, like, mind screw with Batman. This guy, Dollmaker and Joker, are, like, really screwing with Bruce Wayne and Batman big time.
Hmm.
And it's really good. I'm enjoying it a lot. I'm going to go pick up issue 4 the next time I go to the store.
Cool. Definitely. All right.
So.
Well, that does it for my review of Suicide Squad number 5. Again, if you guys aren't picking up this book, give it a shot. The art is a little rough in the first couple of issues, but this guy has really hit his stride in issue 4 and 5. I think things are really tightened up, and I love the use of colors, and I love the sort of tightness of the drawing that he's been able to do. It's very serviceable art for the story. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, it's got nice contrast, you know, from dark to light, from dark to light, and he plays it really well in this issue. He does.
Yeah.
With, I think, just the El Diablo arc and then what's actually going on within the prison itself.
Exactly. And I don't know a lot about Adam Glass. I think he wrote some Deadpool stuff, if I remember reading that correctly, a long time ago. But he's got a great handle on these characters, these kind of insane characters. So what do you have, Steven? I think you were going to do Green Lantern Corps number 5.
Yes, what? Number 5, yes.
And I have not been reading this title, but out of all the Green Lantern titles that I've looked at, I really like, seemed this one was the most attractive to me. So this is one I'm interested to hear you talk about because I might pick it up.
Okay, well, since issue 1, we're dealing with the other Human Lanterns with Guy Gardner, John Stewart, and a few of the more B-class Lanterns. Well, not Kilowog, of course. Then who else is in this group? Isomot's in this group. I think that's how you say his name.
Okay.
And a few of the others, Brick and Hanu. And, in this issue, they've been attacked by the current villains, which are called the Keepers. They were like the gardeners, I guess you could say, of the Green Light and the batteries. I guess the Guardians put them in charge to take care of them and gave them a world of their own. And, they're really weird. They're like one of the Yellow Lanterns. His name is Slush. He's like this green glob. Well, that's what these characters look like, but they're humanoid. And, you know, they're pretty cool. It's just like a skeleton with a will-powered flesh, I guess you could say. Well, we see that the Guardians come through and they take all the batteries away because these batteries are sustaining their home planet and giving them food, vegetation, and a home. So as the Lanterns take back all these batteries, their world dies, so now they're out for, I should say, like, revenge in a way, or vengeance or something. They want what they want, what's theirs, because I guess they were the ones in control of this light, almost, of this willpower. So we see Guy Gardner come in later on. Let's see, I'll start at the beginning. And he's looking, he goes to Kilowog, and he needs like the BAs, like, of the Green Lantern Corps. And Kilowog tells him where he can find these guys. And I guess they're underneath his bar that he has on Oa. And so we go on through a few pages, and we're introduced to Lantern members Lee, Bronchunk, Aldo, and Flint. These guys look pretty hardcore. Like, they're like, your Marines, like 50-year-old Marines that hang out and just drink beer all day. Like, they're awesome looking. I'm looking forward to them. So, Guy goes up to him and he's like, we need your help against these guys. They're destroying Green Lanterns left and right. And, these guys are just like, what do you want with us? Go away. You're just a weakling, and, it goes on, and, Guy Gardner pretty much comes out and calls him a chicken, or they're not up to the job. And, one of the guys says, okay, we're in. it's pretty funny. And then it goes on, in the next, they got the newer recruits, and then I'll just refer to them the BAs because that's what they are. And they introduced Martian Manhunter last issue. He did a psychic probe on one of these guys and learned their whole history and everything. And then, one of the guys calls out Hanu because Hanu he'll use his physical power before he uses his willpower. And, you know, one of the guys is like, yeah, you need your head scraped or something like that. It was really weird. You know, so, you know, everybody gets their, like, one-on-one with the new guys. You know, Isamat goes with one of the other guys. Oh, what this guy was in. I haven't memorized him one. Isamat goes head-to-head with Flint. You know, they have their words. And then Ron Chunk gets into it with Brick, like, starts looking at her, you know, sexually. And then Brick just beats him in the face. And it's interesting. So, and then we go into the history of everything, which I already got into. And then it switches on to where the Keepers are at, and they have a few lanterns captive with John Stewart. And they, you know, they go back and forth that, you know, Stewart can take pain and everything and the torture. Well, we all know that John Stewart was a Marine and in the Army, and he knows what comes with warfare.
Right.
And so we see the torturing go on, and then he eventually plans that, you know, he has more in store for him. And then we scroll back to the Owen science cells with Guy Gardner. And mm-hmm. he asks the guy that he's looking for, they want to fear these guys. They got to fight these guys that only have willpower. They can't use their rings. So they have two Sinestro Corps members locked up. They have, let's see, Fat Man and Little Boy. And Fat Man's this just gargantuan Batman. And then there's Little Boy, which is this scraggly, skinny humanoid. They almost look like they're brothers in a way. I've never seen these two core members before. You know, I'm pretty good with all my core members. So these guys are definitely new to me. And, you know, Gardner's pretty much like, hey, we're going to take you for a ride. And so then there you see Gardner and a few of the others, and they have Fat Man and Little Boy with them. And they're going to take one of the Interceptors, they're called, one of the spaceships, because they don't want to use all their ring powers. And so Gardner and Salak get into it back and forth, because we all know Salak is, he plays by the books, you know. He's, you know, like Daddy's Little Boy or something like that. I don't know, the Guardians. I don't know. I ignore Salak because he's annoying to me. So, you know, later on in the issue, we find them. We see these pirates, these international space smugglers with this cash load of weapons that are about to make a sale. Then the ship that's coming to buy it turns around, and then you see another ship, but it's just a green logo. And so this guy's like, oh, crap, we're in trouble now. And you just see this big explosion on the ship, and you see the lanterns come out. And you see the old schoolers come out, and, you know, they're just battling left and right with, you know, rings and guns. And then you eventually find that they found what they were looking for on the ship is a cache full of awesome weapons. These are just guns, because what better way to probably fight these guys than with guns.
Right.
So, and then the final page, you see them all strapped up to the teeth and guns, and it's pretty cool. So that's the end of that issue.
Yeah, great team on this. Peter J. Tomasi, who I didn't read a lot of his Green Lantern stuff, but when he wrote Batman and Robin, I was a big fan of his stuff there. And then artist Fernando Passerine.
Yep.
You seen that? Not familiar with him either, but he doing an outstanding job with this book.
Oh yeah, the artwork's beautiful. I'm definitely digging it.
Now, I guess both of these guys have worked on this book before. It looks like somewhere around the Blackest Night storyline, and we all know, you know, what a home run that series was. So
big home run.
Good job on DC, not necessarily going for new artists, but going for what has worked in the past.
Yeah, all right. This series is definitely picking up, because I almost dropped it at issue 3, but it's definitely picking up now.
Cool. Okay, so that's going to wrap up our two current issue reviews. Now we're going to go into a special segment that we haven't done before, but it's very similar to the back issue bin on StashMyComics.com. And You know, while we're talking about StashMyComics.com, you want to go ahead and shout out our Facebook and Twitter, something I failed to do last time.
Okay, yeah, our Facebook is, I do believe, facebook.com/StashMyComics.
Okay.
Hopefully that is our tag for it. I've never really looked. Let me look that up right now.
Yeah, I should be more prepared on this, too. I'm not a big Facebook guy myself, so I don't go on it a lot. I just go straight to the Stash My Comics site. But and then it looks like twitter.com/StashMyComics would be the Twitter account.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it.
And, of course, you can email us, podcast@StashMyComics.com. And you can find us on iTunes. And somebody has been kind enough to leave us a review, but we need more if we're going to be higher up in searching on iTunes for comic book podcasts. So if you guys get a chance and you like us, give us a rating on iTunes so we can move up there.
Yes.
And then don't forget our sister podcast, Friends, the Chase Variant podcast, which you can get next week. So you'll hear the Chase Variant and then us and then Chase Variant and us and
back and forth.
That's how we do things. We like to switch it up.
Back issue bin to the future.
All right, so back issues. What did you pick to talk about, and how old is it?
Okay, this is from 2008, I do believe.
Okay.
It's Friday the 13th, Abuser and the Abused. This is done by Wildstorm/DC. You know, as of me, I'm probably one of the only guys on the forums that love the horror comics. I'm a huge fan of Friday the 13th, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Walking Dead, you know, the scary stuff, you know, Vincent Price Presents. And this is by far one of my favorite issues I've ever read in my whole life. Let's see who we got on the art. We have, okay, this was written by Joshua Hale Filekov. I don't know how to pronounce his last name right. It's F-I-A-L-K-O-V. He is currently on the iVampire series with the New 52.
Oh, nice.
So the writing in this issue is strong. I don't know. I don't read iVampire, so I couldn't tell you if the writing's good in there or not.
I've heard it is. It's one of those titles I haven't picked up, but I haven't heard anything bad about it.
No, I haven't heard anything. Hey, it didn't get canceled. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah.
So, and then we have the art by Andy B. That's all that it is. I don't know who he is. And then we also have on the cover work, we had Brandon Badoux, I think. Obviously something Frenchy, maybe French-Canadian. And then Carrie Strachan on the cover. The cover is just beautiful. And the art flows Andy Warhol pop art style. The whole issue's like that. And it's really cool. The storyline revolves around this girl named Maggie. She, you know, high schooler, rough life, depressed. You know, her father, you know, is an alcoholic, you know, married to a mean stepmom. Her mom died a few years before this. And, you know, she gets beaten by her boyfriend and everything like that. You know, so she's really abused and she's on the brink of collapse. And so we go on into the issue. You know, she gets picked on by, you know, her fellow classmates. You know, she comes to school one day with a black eye. And, you know, the girls are saying, oh, it's an improvement on her look. And, you know, her counselor sends her to a therapist, a pastor. And, you know, she's breaking down throughout the whole issue. And the art is just great. It flows with the storyline so well. I just can't stress that out enough. So, you know, she's in her room one night. And she's looking at one of the things she has on her wall that says, God helps those who help themselves. And she just gets this crazy idea. You know, she grabs a knife, puts it in her backpack, and she calls her boyfriend Steve. But before this, when Steve comes to pick her up, you know, Steve wants to go inside or something like that. And she goes, shush, my parents are sleeping. And then it cuts to a frame and her parents are slaughtered. Hmm. So she killed them. So they're off to, you know, she wants to go somewhere, you know, she tries seducing Steve and everything, and Steve is a drunk and, you know, violent. So they head to Camp Crystal Lake, which we all know is where Jason Voorhees takes residence at.
Right.
So she, you know, coerces him into doing things, and out of nowhere, you just see the knife go through him. And he's like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And, you know, they're in a struggle, and then it's nice, it pans into a Steve's eye, and you just see in his eyeball, you see Jason coming for him, which it gets really good here. And, you know, they both freak out. They're like, "Oh, my God." You know, Jason hacks Steve in half, as always. If you're familiar with the Friday the 13th, this is what happens. And, you know, Maggie goes up to him, tries to stab him. And it gets intense here. Maggie and Jason actually start going at it. And she starts just beating the hell out of Jason. And this doesn't happen a lot in the Friday the 13th series. No mere mortal teenager can beat up Jason. It's not right. She goes after him with his own machete, just slaughters him, stabs him. You see blood and guts flying everywhere. And what I love about this is the blood is not red. The blood is black with this pop art style. This awesome art. It's great. And, you know, they're going at it, and she tries to get away in the car, and Jason just comes up behind the car and lifts up this whole back end of this car, like 6 feet up in the air above his head. And then he just hurls the car. You know, we all know Jason has this great strength. You know, she's getting out of the car. The car's been flipped. There's gasoline everywhere. And she's trying to get out. The car explodes. You see, you know, her and Jason stand eye to eye. And then she just says in one frame, she's like, "Please, we're the same." Because they've both been abused all their life. You know, Jason was killed by crummy camp counselors that didn't watch him when he was little. And, you know, they stand toe-to-toe for a minute looking at each other. And she's like, "I'm punishing the people like you did." And she goes, you showed me what to do. I knew you'd understand." And then it just cuts into these frames, and you see Jason pull the machete up. She yells at him, "But we're the same." And then the final scene, you see Jason walking into Camp Crystal Lake with Maggie's head in one hand and her body in the other hand. And that was sort of like a montage to, I figure, Freddy versus Jason. Because at the end of that, if you've seen it, Jason walks into the lake with Freddy's head in one hand and his body in the other. Which is good, you know. I figured I'd do something a little different this time.
Yeah. No, I didn't even aware. I wasn't even aware that this existed, but I know on. I was just looking on Amazon. You can. There's a few volumes of it that you can order. And in 2007, I guess Palmiotti and Gray were on this, which I didn't realize.
Yeah, they're. This series is really good. It's one of the real, you know, each, you know, they don't do too many issues. They'll do like a 6-issue run or something here or there, but a lot of them are like 1 and 2 issues. And, you know, the writing's really strong in all of them, and it really brings the Friday the 13th franchise a lot of respect, because these guys portray Jason so well. And some of these would actually make great little, you know, internet shorts or even movies. You know, they recently did, you know, Freddy versus Jason, and then they did Freddy versus Jason versus Ash from the Evil Dead series, Army of Darkness. And that was catchy. That was funny little art they did. But overall, great read. I give it, you know, 10 out of 10 for one quick read.
Now, I'm assuming that when Wildstorm folded, was that kind of when this ended?
You know what? I don't know. I haven't picked up a new Friday the 13th issue in so long. So, yeah, I'm assuming, yeah.
Because Friday the 13th, I guess, is a Warner Brothers franchise.
Yes, it is.
Cool. All right. Well, similar to yours, not completely similar, but staying in the horror type vein, I reviewed something that I picked up at an antique store a few weeks ago, and it is Morbius. This is a Marvel character. This is Morbius, the Living Vampire, number 28. And this came out in December of 1994. Writer is Lisa Trusciani, penciler Craig Gilmore, inkers Bryant and Witherby, letterer Janice Chang. I wonder if there's a relation to Cliff. Probably not. Colorist John Calise. And this is a interesting book. I'm not big on vampire books, but something about this out of the stack that I bought hit me. I really enjoyed it. The art is not spectacular by any means. It is very much your typical 90s sort of serviceable art. It's not bad. It's not great, but moves the story along nicely. And, you know, I don't know if – do you know much about Morbius, the character?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, okay, yeah, you're a horror guy, so you would probably know.
Yeah. What issue are we dealing with again?
This is issue 28. And so, evidently, this character, a little history, they say he was created in response to what was a self-censorship of the comics code. They had a ban on it for quite some time on vampires and other supernatural characters.
Yes.
And in 1971, this was lifted. And so that's when we first see this character come out. He is basically a character who is given vampiric abilities via scientific means rather than supernatural means.
Yes.
And originally they tried to use, I guess, some red and blue characters, colors within this character to make him seem more heroic. But, you know, eventually we get just sort of to the regular vampire look. And little history, he was born in Greece, attacked by the Lizard, and defeated when Spider-Man and the Lizard joined forces. This is something I got from Wikipedia. A flashback reveals that Morbius was actually a Nobel Prize-winning biochemist. He attempted to cure himself of a rare blood disease using vampire bats and electroshock therapy. So instead, he becomes afflicted with basically vampirism.
Yes.
And now he has to digest blood in order to survive. All the other vampire things come into play. He can't be in the light. He has fangs. He looks more like a bat than most vampires. He's got this ugly kind of flattened nose, and he's really pretty grotesque to look at.
Yeah, this was later in the series when they started drawing him more like a bat.
Right.
So, because I do believe that issue ended in like the 30s or something, I want to say.
I think you're right, yeah. It didn't go on much further after this. But yeah, this issue starts out, and Morbius is tracking down this pimp named Mr. Phelps. And Morbius had rescued and fell in love with this woman named Lena in some of the previous issues. And he goes to this pimp's location to get her things. And the pimp thinks that Morbius is there to kill him. He's actually there to ask him a favor because he promised his girlfriend that he would try not to kill so much. And Morbius' justification is that he has to eat blood, so if he's going to do this, he might as well take out bad guys. That's sort of his justification for doing what he does.
I don't blame him.
So he's there to get her stuff, and I mentioned him wanting a favor. He actually wants the number of this guy who sets up restraining devices in this guy's house. This guy is a bad dude. He kidnaps these women. He chains them up. He sells them out. He's all around a bad dude. And so we're kind of wondering, what does Morbius want with these chains? But anyways, the guy gives him the number. He hangs the guy upside down, calls the police, but he winds up feeding anyways off of a couple of guys, recently deceased guys he finds in a room. Evidently, this Mr. Phelps has offed these guys. And so now we're back to Morbius' lab. There's another doctor there named Jacob, and he's trying to help cure Morbius of his affliction. Morbius has decided this issue, he's not going to feed anymore. He's just going to have to die. He can't take the slaughter anymore. He pleads for this doctor to understand. Well, of course, this guy doesn't want his friend to die. And he says that he is close to a cure. And there are other characters in this book. There's a woman named Martine, who we find out is a werewolf. I'm sorry. What do my notes say here? Another woman afflicted. Yeah, I guess they're saying she has some sort of werewolf disease or vampire disease. And there's another guy named Jack, also with this werewolf disorder. So basically, the doctor is close to curing all sorts of ailments, werewolf, vampires included. And so this werewolf guy, Jack, he's racing off after leaving the home of this Martine. They have this relationship. And he's going to ask Morbius for a favor. So he races off on his motorcycle. And here back at the lab, we see this woman that Morbius has been seeing knocking on the door. He's normally in a human disguise, so he cannot show his face to her. She leaves him a note basically saying that she appreciates all his help, but she's going to go back and get her stuff herself. So basically, Morbius has agreed to go get her things. She thinks he's going as a doctor. Obviously, he goes back as a vampire to confront this bad guy.
Yeah.
Morbius is worried that if she goes back there, she's going to meet up with the police. She's going to get in trouble. She's going to get deported. She was brought here illegally. And he cares for her. So he's able to at least get her from going down there. He catches her right before she gets on a bus. But now Morbius is hurting. He hasn't fed in forever. And he starts to sort of change back because he's in a temporary human form. And he meets up with Jack. Jack helps him get back to his apartment. And Morbius, this is where Morbius asks him to chain him up so he won't feed anymore. And through the course of this, he starts to get so ravaged that he's able to break free from these shackles. This huge fight between him and Jack, who's now in werewolf form, ensues. And apparently this fight has happened all night long, and it, to the point where they don't even know what time of day it is. And Morbius opens up some blinds, and of course it's daytime, and he gets completely fried. And we sort of leave this issue thinking that the doctor is too late. Morbius is already dead. And like you said, it ends somewhere in the 30s, so we can assume that he at least survived for a few more issues after this. But, you know, interesting read. I liked the fact that he was kind of a bad guy and kind of regretting his actions. And just a cool vampire book. I'm not a big vampire person, but this had enough of a different spin on it just for me to take interest. And that's all I got.
Yeah, I got a few issues of Morbius myself. You know, never got big into him. Never.
I'm sure a lot of people were surprised to hear me talk about Marvel. So I had to throw a Marvel. And I have much love for Marvel. In fact, I recently, they had a sale on Comixology, mm-hmm. and the Uncanny X-Force, like the first four issues, were on sale for 99 cents a piece. And I picked those up, and man, I'm hooked on that.
Really?
Have you read any of the Uncanny X-Force?
No, you know, I did X-Force, and, well, the new breed of X-Force, which, you know, Wolverine, you know, Warpath, X-23. You know, I collected quite a few of those, and then afterwards when I saw, who was it, Deadpool jumping in, and mm-hmm. I was just, at that point in time, I'm like, oh, Deadpool in another comic book. I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
He has been definitely overused, and fortunately for me, I haven't read a whole lot of Deadpool, so him being in these issues actually was kind of an interesting comic relief, but Uncanny X-Force is basically Wolverine, Deadpool, this newer character, Phantom X, Psylocke, and Archangel, I guess. And they're just kind of an off-the-grid sort of rogue group that are doing things that other X-Men don't want to do. That's what I gather is kind of the X-Men X-Force theme.
Yeah. Real fast. What sort of targets are they hitting up this time? Because when the whole Generation Hope and all that was going on with Cable jumping back and forth with Hope during the Messiah complex and all that, you know, they were hitting everybody. They were just like slaughtering everybody.
Yeah, this.
So, who are their targets now?
Well, like I said, I only got the first four issues, and this all revolves around Apocalypse. I guess he has been reborn within this child. And so this group is trying to bring Apocalypse back. He's just a little boy, and they're charged with basically taking out the kid.
Oh, so it's like a whole reversal now of the Hope. Like Messiah complex, you know, saving Hope was good, but now, like, we have vice versa now, Apocalypse as a baby.
Right.
And let's kill the bad baby now.
Right. And that's basically what it comes down to. And at the end, you know, spoilers, you know, Psylocke is not able to take the kid out. And they basically all agree not to do this, to try to sort of rehab him. And then at the last minute, boom, the kid is taken out. I was assuming it was Deadpool, but it actually wound up being Phantom X that did the deed that nobody wanted to do. So.
Now, Phantom X, is he the dude with the guns all in white?
Yeah, he's like white and black, and he's got these guns, and he's got this weird sort of spaceship-type thing that he's connected to. I didn't fully understand what he was about, but...
I thought he was a previous character of sorts originally.
I think his first appearance, I looked it up earlier, I want to say 2002. First appeared in New X-Men 128, August 2002. Created by Grant Morrison and Igor Cordy. So I guess he's another Weapons Plus program guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't read a ton of Marvel, but If they keep doing things like this, you know, giving me little tastes of things for 99 cents, you know, I'm more than willing to give it a shot.
Oh, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You know, like me, I'll go to the bargain bins at my shop and, you know, I'll stack up on just random issues. Like in my stash, if you ever go look at my stash on stashmycomics.com, you know, I have like 700 titles, different titles. You know, I don't classify them as like Marvel, DC, Image, Valiant. Now, I list everything by title, and it's I have so many off titles, it's ridiculous. But, you know, it gets me into things, gets me out of things, tells me what to avoid, tells me what to get. So, like, as of right now, Chance is, you know, he said I should go get a Flash issue. So I have Flash number 4, which I have not got to yet, so looking forward to that.
Yeah, I love the art. I mean, in the Flash issues, I picked up the Flash series before the most recent run that only lasted like I don't know 10 or 12 issues. Same artist, whose name escapes me at the moment. You know who I'm talking about?
Nah, you know me. I'm not too keen on all the artists and writers, and I'm all about stories and characters.
Flash artist. Anyhow, the last Flash that came out before Flashpoint, I was on for a while and then kind of dropped it. Loved the art, but Flash is just a character I have a hard time latching onto for whatever reason. Maybe it's his powers. I don't know. The time travel stuff can often get confusing for me. But
yeah,
I've heard nothing but great things about this latest series.
Yeah. Did you happen to listen to the recent interview with Brian Bellacciato is his name? Did you happen to listen to that Jason and Chance did?
No, I haven't made it through that yet.
Awesome, awesome interview. Everybody should listen to it. You know, it's up on the site. But Brian actually came out and said that Flash could be possibly one of the strongest heroes in the DC universe, which I thought that was really weird. I always, you know, I always thought Flash was sort of a dinky character. You know, hey, I can run fast.
Yeah.
You know, you compare him with Quicksilver, obviously, from the Marvel universe. I like to go toe-to-toe with Marvel and DC characters all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just, you know, he's almost like an over-glorified Quicksilver with more storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, it's cool. I definitely, you know, I skimmed through issue four, and I did like the new outfit he's got kicking right now. But I'm looking forward to that. And then, let's see. Do you know anything about Animal Man? I picked up issue number one, and I have not gotten to it yet.
No, it's on my list of things I really want to pick up. I might wait till that one comes out in a trade. The art looks in such a way that it might be something I'd actually want to have physically instead of digitally.
It's insane. It's a lot of dialogue, and just going through it, through the pictures, it looks really cool, and it looks like it's going to be a really trippy series.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and it ties in nicely with Swamp Thing, which Jason and I have discussed before.
Really? Yeah. I don't get to Swamp Thing, so. After that 1980s movies, I pretty much get hope on them.
Those are terrible. They had a cartoon, too.
Yes, they did. Yes, I remember the cartoon. That was also horrible.
And figures. I had the Swamp Thing action figure at one point.
Yeah, I had a few of them. I had the one that could fall apart. Those were equally horrible.
Were they supposed to fall apart?
Well, no. Like, you press the button on his back, and he'd, like, fall apart. But he was all connected by strings.
Ah.
So you could put them back together, and, you know, he's supposed to be like a vine pile or something.
Hmm.
You know. But yeah, Swamp Thing, it's rough.
Well, there's been a lot of good things digitally here lately. Comixology has been having all kinds of sales, so anytime I see these 99-cent things, they tend to suck me in.
Yeah, you know, I've always wondered if they lowered their prices to like 75 to 50 cents a digital read. I wonder if they get more sales that way.
I think they would. I've thought that for anything over a year old, it should just be 99 cents. I don't get the $1.99 thing.
Yeah.
Because I would be way more likely to pick up back issues for 99 cents.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one more dollar, but I think in the end, it would definitely be more profitable for them.
Yeah. A few of us on the forums right now, I'm getting a subscription to the Marvel Digital Reads.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I've been enjoying that a lot. The digital reads are fun.
Hmm.
You know, in one month, we did almost 300 issues.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody is reading and had a real good time with it. I got to renew the subscription soon, though. It gave up the other day, so.
I think it's like a month free, isn't it?
No, you know, I just went to, you know, local toy store, picked up the prepaid card, and did that.
Oh. So, I had a hard time getting it to work on my particular tablet, and I think it was just a downloading issue. This rather than being able to just download it and have it, I think, does it download sort of streaming wise as you read it?
Are you referring to the Comixology Marvel?
No, the Marvel subscription.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know there was an app or anything for that. Or are you just doing like off the web page itself?
I guess it's just off the web page. Are you?
Yeah.
Is yours through Comixology or?
No, I think it's Marvel's own digital reader. You know, and
Marvel's own app.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know. Well, let's see. Let's clear this up. I know Comixology makes a iPhone Droid app
mm-hmm.
for Marvel exclusively.
Right.
And then I do know they have a DC one, and then they have the big Comixology one.
Right.
And then if you go to Marvel's Digital Comics on their website, it's just exclusively all Marvel brand.
Okay.
So, and, you know, that was a fun, you know, I read the whole Messiah Complex and Second Coming off there.
Hmm.
And, you know, they're easy to read, quick, easy. You know, I like the format. I know a few of us didn't like the format.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, $10 a month for all the comics you can read.
Yeah.
I got no complaints. You know, I did almost, like, 30 issues myself.
Hmm.
I know Chance and Chip from the forums, also they're going through Ultimate Spider-Man, and they're, you know, that's like, what, 70 issues plus or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not bad. I, you know, digital format's really cool. I wish it was a little cheaper. I'd be spending more money on it.
Yeah. It's come a long way. I'm happy reading primarily digital, and then stuff that I pick up physically tends to be older issues that I don't think will ever come on digitally or will be a long time. I recently, remember last time I talked about Cross-Gen Comics?
Yes.
I recall that. Well, that Sigil, I want to say it's Sigil, S-I-G-I-L.
Yeah.
I told you I picked up 20 issues for like $7, and that finally came in, so I'm working my way through that. And really a fun story, if you are a fan of things like Battlestar Galactica or Farscape, it's kind of along that line of sci-fi, and the art is amazing. And you're talking about a book that came out in 2000 and was $2.95 way back then, so the quality is really good.
That's good.
And I guess CrossGen did come out through Marvel. They've had some more comics, but they don't seem to be that much in the continuity with the other CrossGen stuff. But if you ever get a chance to pick up any of the CrossGen titles, you can get them cheap, and the quality is really amazing. It was definitely ahead of its time. Well, anything else you've picked up and been reading, or?
No, just, you know, I picked up The Flash and Animal Man. You know, want to get to those to see how those are. Everybody's bragging that they're awesome. And what led me on into the Animal Man was the last issue of Animal Man. The cover was just gore-rific, I guess you could say. So I'm going to give it a read and try issue one out, and hopefully I like it and I buy more. Really nothing else has came out that sparked my eyes, you know. Just that The Awakening, you know, I'm glad you brought that up again, because I totally forgot about that. And I really want to get a hold of those. Because like I said, you know, I might go back collecting Xenoscope comics again, because Marvel's on the downside right now. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, they've got that company, Xenoscope, has some really good stuff. The art is really good. I mean, it all tends to be sort of that fairy tale stuff. So that's why I think getting The Waking in here is important for them to sort of switch things up a little bit.
Yeah, but if you ever get a chance, pick up a Grimm's Fairy Tale.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the earlier issues, like maybe like issue like 1 through 30 or something like that,
mm-hmm.
It's a really nice spin to classic fairy tales.
Hmm.
Like they're not, you know, they are more mature. I'll put that out there now. But they're really cool reads, and the artwork from cover to the last page is, you know, 10 out of 10.
Did you ever read The Chronicles of Dr. Herbert West?
Yes, I have. The first two issues I have of that. You know, another horror comic franchise that I'm in love with. So
yeah, I love the Frankenstein mythology. So the first issue was free on that, and I read that, and then they've got issues 2 and 3 for 99 cents on Comixology too. So.
Yeah, those are fun. Are you familiar with the movies at all?
No.
They're called The Reanimator. There's Reanimator, Bride of Reanimator, Beyond Reanimator. Awesome cheesy horror flicks. You know, if you're bored, definitely watch one. You know, I don't know if they're on Netflix or anything, but like that. But they're really funny. And I love the comic. The comic was just excellent. You know, I stopped. I think it was a short series, though. I think it was only a few issues, maybe a 4 or 6 part.
Yeah, I think it's out in trade, and so you're right, probably like 4 or 5 issues.
Yeah, that. That was a really cool read. You know, the artwork's great. Another comic along those lines is Witch Doctor, and I do believe that's Image.
I think you're right. That one sounds familiar.
Yeah, I picked up the first issue of that, and I also had the preview for it, and that was a pretty cool read, too, and I'd really like to get that. If I can ever find it in a back issue bin or even digital, I'd definitely pick that up, too.
Hmm. Well, you were talking about the Reanimator movies. This is kind of off the subject, but I'm a huge fan of really bad movies, and I have to mention one of the worst, funniest movies I've seen is a friend and I watched this recently. It's called Steel Justice, and if you're not familiar with it, there's probably no surprise there, but Karate Kid, the first Karate Kid movie, the coach in that movie is the star of Steel Justice. It's very hard to find because I know it's not on DVD. I picked it up on VHS, and a friend of mine was in town, and we love to watch bad movies, and we saw the cover, and we were like, oh my gosh, this has to be bad. And we
laughed. Probably like a really bad B movie because I think this is on Netflix. I think I was scrolling through Netflix the other day, and I might have saw this.
Oh, is it on Netflix?
I don't know. Or it might have been another really bad, like, post-apocalyptic type bad C movie that looked really excellent to watch. Because, you know, I love cheesy horror films. You know, some of my favorites, you know, like Brain Dead or, you know, Dead Alive, it's called. Like old school Night of the Living Dead stuff I love. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Really cheesy gore fest, you know, She-Devil on Wheels, stupid stuff, The Monster with Two Heads. It's really bad. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of cheesy movies.
Oh yeah. If you watch them with the right person, it can be some of the funniest moments of your life. Because people either get movies like that or they don't.
Yeah.
And some movies are just bad and not even in a funny way. But some movies try to be bad on purpose, and those don't do it for me either. They have to be a movie that is trying to be good and fails miserably. That's the way to go.
Oh man, that's the good stuff there. Oh man. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think I have anything else to talk about. You know, the only thing we got coming up is February 12th. We have Walking Dead premieres again.
Hmm.
And then right after that is going to be Comic Book Guys with Kevin Smith. And I'm looking forward to watching that. That's going to probably be a good show to watch.
Now, what is that on? I'm not familiar with it.
It's AMC. It's going to be premiering right after Walking Dead.
Okay.
And, you know, it's Kevin Smith from, you know, Mallrats, you know, Jay and Silent Bob fame. Right. And I don't know who he's going to be with. It's more like a round table talk like Chase Varian is. And I don't know if he's going to have, like, you know, artists on there, writers, you know, special guests, celebrities and whatnot. But it's going to be all things comic book.
Cool.
And I think that's going to be really fun because Kevin Smith is definitely one of the top three names for celebrities that come to mind. So,
yeah, and in terms of names that people know that are connected to comics, definitely.
Yeah, and if you guys go to StashMyComics.com, there was a blog by Jason on there for his top five biggest celebrities. So, which was a pretty cool article. You know, a few of them I didn't know, but definitely worth checking out.
Cool.
So.
Well, yeah, I think that wraps it up for me as well. We will convene next time and make sure next week you guys, if you're listening to this and it's Tuesday, next Tuesday will be the Chase variant. And again, let us know if you have any questions or comments or, you know, want to hop in on the show. Just shoot me an email. And we appreciate you listening. And go to iTunes, please, and give us some feedback there, too.
Yeah, also the website, people. Come to the forums. Come join the fun.
Yep. Yep, if you haven't joined yet and you know nothing about Stash My Comics, obviously we have the forum, we have the two podcasts, but more than that, we have the comic book tracking software that's completely free. You can organize your stuff and meet a lot of great people. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, very good. I thank you again, Steven.
No problem. It's been my pleasure.
we will catch you next time. Thank you guys for listening. Have a good night, morning, or whatever time it is. Bye-bye.